You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Making waves.
Well, welcome to Making Waves, everyone. This is episode 73. We're right in 73. Will you please tell me we're on 73?
I think it's 74. I'll check with the home
73
office.
73/74. Anyway, we're almost in the mid 70s. Welcome back. This is the second episode of the second season of Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast. We're now part of the Evergreen podcast family. So, but we still love our folks over there at Sound Talent Media. So thank you guys. And welcome and join us. Listen, guys, if you're checking out our podcast for the first time, or if you've been a longtime listener but you haven't subscribed yet, make sure and go subscribe, review, rate, and just tell all your friends about us, man. We got a lot of stuff going on. And speaking of a lot of stuff going on, let's welcome Eva and Rob from Eva Under Fire. Guys, thanks for joining us.
Hey. Oh,
thank you guys for having us. This is so fun. Yeah. Holy yes. smoke.
Listen, welcome to the Shiprock family, first and foremost. We're going to talk about your performance when we go live into our Facebook thing. But I already mentioned to you guys were like seriously one of those bands that I came out the cruise and I was like, wow. Yep.
That's so awesome. It was such a great experience for us in so many ways. We can't wait to get into it.
Yeah. Justin was particularly telling me that he's very judgy when it comes to performance, but we won him over.
Oh,
yeah.
You must not have been listening very well.
Despite your guitar, it's totally your fault. Yeah.
I based my thinking off of, again, how you guys deal with the audience and like when you're just out and about and you're meeting them, how you do the interaction. And I also look at the faces of the people in the crowd when they're watching you. That's the tell.
Cool. I love that.
I mean, you guys can slay all fucking day long, but if the crowd's kind of sitting there kind of like checking their watches, okay. But they were into you. They knew the songs. And when we announced you guys, I mean, it was a quick turnaround, but everyone was like, fucking love that band. I'm like, well, they have they've got a fan base. This is a win. This is a win for us.
Did you know we had already been working on taking over the world?
Yeah, that's fine by us. We like that.
That's the thing about our community that you got plugged into, right? Is that the moment we announced y'all is like they just consumed it. Because they were excited for the thing that we do and the thing that they're excited about, and they want to familiarize yourself with everything that's happening, and that obviously worked for them, and they appreciated it, and then they showed the love at the shows and on the ship, and it was very impressive. It was really great feedback from all the guests. And
Wow, well, we love being there with them, man. So I'm so glad that it went over well for them, because it certainly did for us.
So. Listen, you guys have a pedigree. You're from Detroit. And if you're not killing it from Detroit, well,
you're doing it wrong.
It's a lot to live up to. obviously, Chad, who's not here tonight, Chad is off in, I think he was in Los Angeles. Anyway, he's a Detroit guy. And we always speak about Detroit rock and roll. You can't help but do it. Whether it's Cream Magazine or Iggy or any of those things, working way up to you guys. I mean, there's just that pedigree is there, and it seems to kind of be in the DNA of people from old Michigan there. So
I love it.
How did you guys get started? Where did you meet? And tell us that.
It's kind of a funny, very old school story. Because we came up in, like I was mentioning to you before, the bar scene, right? So we'd all been playing since we were in high school and just random bands, different projects, right? And so we knew each other. A lot of us had known each other from just those, you know, playing in the local bar circuits, you know? And Rob just so happened to know one of the other guys that we used to jam with from a different project. I knew our drummer Corey from a different project. Ed and Chris came from the same different project. And so after a while, after we'd always, you know, played in the same bars and stuff, everybody was kind of just, you know, taking a break, doing real life for a minute. And we were supporting one of our other buddies who had like a local festival they were playing. We showed up and we just kind of ran into everybody there. And we're like, oh, you know, hey, what's going on, you know? And everybody gets to talking. We go, yeah, we're not really jamming too much anymore, but it'd be fun, you know? Yeah, I know, you know, we miss it a lot. And So then we all kind of was like, we should just do this again, right? Give it one last shot, one last go round. They're like, yeah, let's figure it out, you know? So we started jamming, and it would just sort of, something was supposed to be super informal, no real plan for what we were going to do with it. And when we started to write, it was like, we all kind of looked at each other.
It clicked right away. Like the first writing session we had together, I think we wrote like 3 or 4 songs, which is, I mean, I'm not saying the quality is like perfect, you know, but like to have that, I guess that vibe with new people that you're playing with, to be able to just come out the gate with a couple of songs and not have clashing and just immediately get each other's, what they're trying to do, you know, and it worked with us. We're fortunate for that. But
yeah, I think 2 of them actually ended up on the first record. It was Betrayer.
Yeah.
And old stuff. And I think it was Drift. Yeah. Off the Anchors album. So if you're want to dig around in the old school vibes, we've got all that stuff. You can check it out. But yeah, Betrayer was one of the first, and it became kind of a favorite, which was fun. So that's sort of where it started.
Did you write in the jam sessions, or was there a separate sit down, or do you write as a band all in the same room, work through the parts? And
full volume garage band.
Well, yeah, good. Different, kind of both. So when we started, it would be a lot more like you play this and then I try to hear something and then I add to it or have suggestions on how to make the song better or what to do next. And now that we're on like, a sort of different level and working with like producers and songwriters, there is that aspect of like sitting down and thinking about the song and what does this mean and how does this go together? More of like architecting it as opposed to just getting in a room and jamming. But I honestly prefer just the jam part. I don't like thinking about music too much. It should just
be natural. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. No. Yeah, your most favorite records, for the most part, you'll find at least our era, Justin, which is probably 15 years before this, and yours was maybe 40 years before this, back during olden times. When they had the low drums, but you and I, Justin, most of the records that we love, and maybe you too, I'd like your thoughts on this. They were like the guys wrote them in the living room, or they wrote them in the jam session. Then they brought that whole thing in the studio and they went, we're recording this now. And I think that there's a real, I'm not going to be your manager, but there's a real value in that. And Rob, you said that you prefer that. There's a real value in that that separates you, because a lot of bands don't do that. And it's neither good nor bad, but there's some spontaneity in the room. There's something in the room. There's something physical in the room. It's a spirit. It's the air. It's the vibe. It's whatever that is captured in that moment. Think about like the Pearl Jams and the Metallicas and the Who's and the Beatles. Sure. It's like that stuff happened in a jam space, right? And then they took it in the studio and worked on it there. But the guts, the nuts, and the bolts were all there in real time. So I love the fact that turns you on, Rob, for sure. I love that.
So one of the good examples of that for me is Alice in Chains EP, The Jars of Flies. Mm-hmm. And they just kind of like jammed, you know, they did something, they wanted to do something like acoustic bass and stuff. They just wanted to jam, and that's what happened. And that whole EP is fantastic. And a lot of those examples that you mentioned are the same thing, you know. Mm-hmm. Now everything of course, you know, arguments can be made, you know, for or against like recording to a click. You know, it depends on what kind of band you are. But yeah, there's definitely something to capturing a moment, and that moment lives on forever, and it inspires so many other people. And when you can hit something like that, that's awesome.
Yeah, there's something inspiring about having $1,000, which will buy you 12 hours of studio time, and you got to nail it.
Yeah, so,
yeah. Usually, you mentioned something early, Eva, about you guys, and something I should ask all you guys is like you said, we're gonna give this one last chance. Yeah. Is there a point in all artists' life where they say they've kind of run into walls, things didn't work out, breakups? Is it always about one more chance, or is there a definitive one more chance in most people's, you know, chambers? Like, I'm only going to try this one more time. I'm not going to keep doing this to myself. Or is it just basically you're telling yourself a lie? Like, I'm always going to try this one more time.
Well, so I think you kind of hit gold with that, right? The distinction is that one more time what you do before you give up, or is it what you do before you change something and try again? Right. So, and I think that musicians, when I've talked to other creatives, artists in any kind, but mostly musicians as well. They have, it is in their core. It's just built different. You feel different. It's strange to put yourself back into this 9-to-5 box when you've tried for so long to establish what you've always been so passionate about. And there's this thing about dreams that just, you know, it feels like it's just, this is gone now, right? But, and I think some people I've seen walk away from it and they've lived massively happier lives when they've decided, you know what, I'm not going to keep beating my head against this brick wall. I want family life. I want career paths. I want whatever it is that they're also very passionate about. But those people that I've seen do that are mostly people that truly just, they played their instruments. Maybe they even played them exceptionally well, but they didn't truly, I don't feel like, identify as creatives where they've just constantly needed that outlet. Because I feel like if that's what's in your core, you'll find it no matter what your path becomes. You will be the, you know, mom of two beautiful kids and happily married and all of these different things, living your best 9-to-5 life, but then also have a side hustle where you like paint for, you know, extra income.
I was going to say, there's a whole, those people we talk about, like, hey, I stopped doing that. Music was part of my past. Didn't work out. I'm going to do this and I'm going to raise a family and have a household, which in its own way is a lost art, because quite honestly, it's managing everything in order to make something work. So threading the needle there.
Yeah.
But I also think with a lot of people, there's a big empty hole in them somewhere, and they're really good at disguising it because it's a bitter pill to swallow. They realize A, didn't complete something or try something, or maybe you're like, I felt empty because I felt like I lost that, or I really want to do it, but it doesn't fit into this life now I've built for myself where other people are responsible.
Yeah.
I'm responsible for all these people now. So, it's that's the conundrum, I think, of artistry. It's like, hey, you're either all in, you're a lifer, and you're going to keep grinding, and you might grind yourself at 50 going, we're still fucking living out of a van. Shit, this is not what I thought, but you're doing it. Or right. You say, hey, I'm going to hang it up, man. I got other things I got to do, but I'm going to side gig. I'll play here and there, and I'll do my thing. Or like you said, you'll paint or whatever. And I think that's super important for people to never give that up just because for themselves, because it makes them a better husband, father, everything, because they feel whole.
Absolutely. So, yeah. And I wanted, and I'm glad that you brought that to light, because maybe at some point we figured this might be able to pay bills, right? So we're getting there, thanks to all of you beautiful people. But each day is another step closer when you got people like Shipwrecked. But you know, the thing I think we found out was that it's just something, like you said, it is in you, it is a part of your soul, it is something that you have to have in your life to be authentically you. And it doesn't really matter what it does for you, just that you can continue it is the biggest thing, right? We will always write, we will always, you know, just because that's who we are. And whether it pays bills or not is kind of secondary. In this particular path, it is what we've been able to kind of get a chance to maybe actually fulfill now. but I think that when we wrote together that first time and it was just the vibe and it was just the energy and we were like, we can't give this up.
Well, look, I mean, if you'd have told me 4 or 5 years ago, whenever we started this thing, because I just wanted to write and play some local shows, you know, nothing big, but I never wanted to stop songwriting. If you'd have told me that, you know, fast forward to last year and this year still to come, that we'd be on tour with all these big bands doing this on these big stages, I would have thought you were full of BS, you know, like that wasn't the goal. It never was in the beginning, but now that it's here, it's just like cloud nine. Like she was singing that Paramore song. Like, how did we get here? You know, this is crazy. But for me personally, there was kind of like a moment in time where I just said, yeah, I'm not okay with like doing something else, you know? And that, I mean, who knows how long that might change someday, who knows? It's not going anywhere anytime soon, but like both of us have had things happen in our lives, like that make us really value time and experiences more so almost than money and some other things. And of course you got to make ends meet. You got to do what you got to do, but you can also do what makes you happy, whether it be a hobby or whether it be something a little more than that, like it's turning into for us. So it's always encouraged and we're grateful. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. The big stages and everything, that's the fairy dust they sprinkle in front of you to keep you going.
Yeah.
Right. Sure. Hey, yeah. You're going to be next year. I see you guys. I'm playing you're going to be playing these big festivals with thousands of people. Okay, we're going to work towards that.
And I think the thing you're going to, you probably discovered now too, is that there is no destination.
Mm-hmm. No.
It's the ride.
No. You hate to say it, Miley Cyrus, whoever wrote that song, he was right. It's the fucking climb.
Yep. Yeah.
It is, man. It's not. And that's the thing, you know, because I spent a lot of time in artist management myself, 20 plus years, as a matter of fact. And it was, I work with a lot of young acts. And you have to warn, you have to be warned of, you know, you had a really great songwriter showcase and you had a really good writer's round and Nashville stuff, right? And then you had a really great meeting with a publisher, right? And then it's like, just take a breath, because all of this is built, all of this is just a staircase, right? Stairway to heaven, if you will, right? It's just a stairwell, and the stairwell never ends. Like, well, I mentioned The Who, they're going to go back out on tour, for crying out loud. Are they even alive? Like, because the stairway, because they didn't stop, it didn't go, they didn't get to the top and look around and go, well, we really did it, didn't we, boys? Yes, this is great. Look at us. They just kept walking up the stairs. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, your first gig at a bar, your second gig at a bar where you've started to feel a little love and making records and releasing music. And then it's like, this just, we're just going, this is what we do. There's no, you know, when we get this, then we'll make it. If we get this, then we'll have made it. It's not ever like that. Because the other thing is, it's really fucking hard. It's hard as shit to do those things. So appreciate the moments that you've got when you get them, but realize it's like, now we're going to have to go eat some more shit for a while, you know, to get to the next thing. And then hopefully at the end of it, or near, when you start building it, there's less shit to eat, you know?
You know, what's good for us is we've played local scene for many years of our lives, and we know what the grind is like, and we appreciate every bit of it. And which makes us so grateful for everything that's happening now. It's like, you know, any new thing that comes in, it's just, you know, completely unexpected and wonderful. And because of that grind, because of that climb up the ladder, you know, and it'll never stop. It doesn't, you know, most bands don't stop.
Yeah, it's a state of being. And I think it makes it more special too, that we are all people who have kind of grown up in that same scene, right? We're all from Southeast Michigan. We all sort of knew each other since we were kind of kids, you know, literally for my bass player and my rhythm guitar player, have known each other since grade school. It's just funny that like a garage band of friends could do this still.
Mm-hmm. Well, the chase is better than the catch, as they say.
Yeah.
But so speaking of, let's pivot. New album coming out. And excuse my French, it sounds fucking monster.
I wasn't sure if I could swear, so I was censoring myself, but now I know.
Do what? Do what now?
I didn't know if we could swear, so I was censoring myself.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
We don't fucking swear.
We don't know. But it is a great record, and it's one of those ones where you just hear Unstoppable and you go, love it or hate it, that's a fucking big song. That's a hit. And I'm not trying to blow smoke up your ass, but it is what it is. You envision stuff when you listen to music and you go, well, where's the placement in the marketplace for this?
Yep.
Well, it looks to me like it'd be like they could probably use the chorus for like some sort of NFL like little 12-second clip, right? About, you know, the guy going over the top, it's going to win a touchdown, Unstoppable.
Mm-hmm.
It's unreal. It's got that. It's got empowerment. You know, you could take any kind of movement of empowerment and use it for that. Hell, you could use it in a Mortal Kombat. You could use it for that because it just has that big feeling. It's the kind of song that bands like Shinedown have cut their teeth on. And it's a fucking hit. It's a hit. And congratulations on writing not only that song, but the opener with Spencer, right?
Yeah,
it's just like, that's another song. And it's like, wow, it's similar in a little vein. It's got this big, just a big, like top of the mountain sound to it. But I'm like, yep, they figured it out. It's amazing.
Thank you.
It's a great record, guys. I expect nothing but awesomeness from it. And I mentioned earlier, I'll let Al get in here, but I mentioned you guys can straddle a lot of genres of this record.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no reason why I'm saying like the song that's got a country feel to it. And if I'm a programmer for a country, I'm like, yep, let's put it in a rotation. Who cares? There's those things, those lines are getting blurred so much.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, and you know, it's like country and rock fans are really one and the same. I mean, everybody who's gone and seen Metallica has probably seen Kenny Chesney in their life, and it's a big rock show. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I'm thinking, man, that song right there, there's a lot of that crossover appeal. And I'm sorry, but if I'm your publisher, I'm scrambling, going, yep, where can we slot this? This is going to be big. Thanks for giving us the stuff to work with.
No rules. No rules.
None. So yeah. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Talk about the album.
Yeah, I'm ready. After that kind of intro, geez, now I have to really figure out how I'm going to play.
Again, I don't say that without giving it enough listens and understanding what... I love 15-minute Iron Maiden songs, but I also know what a 4-minute big rock radio song sounds like.
I love it.
So, yeah. I
think in this context, right, where everybody is streaming and they have all kinds of different things that they love. And so playlists are just so varied between sounds and genres. And I think that this is what we kept in mind when writing this record, that people do enjoy a lot of different sounds, even on the same compilation, right? That's not like there is a place, like you said, for you said 15-minute Iron Maiden songs. I say concept album, right? When it's like very much flows into the same sort of zone. And then there's other things that are just built to be, you know, radio takeover, you know, and that's really what we wanted. But in all the ways that I could explore that, right? I wanted songs that could inspire, but were, based in true story, you know, and sort of played with different genre bending, you know, things. Like Blow is very active rock. Unstoppable is not, you know, it's one of those things that we were kind of like, this could be a crossover, but I love that swing, you know? And there's a few others on the record that kind of have similar cadence, but it's different enough. Mm. That really could wind up on two various, very different playlists. Unstoppable was super fun. And what I loved about what we were writing in this record, the record is called Love, Drugs, and Misery, by the way. And that's it kind of describes all of the different themes, right? And very thematic with a lot of my, you know, what the song is about in different ways. But Unstoppable originally was built to be more like fun. And one of the things that we write, you know, just naturally as us as writers and as rock music fans, right? Big fans of like emotional music, you know? But a lot of that became kind of just heavy, you know? Even if it was inspired, it was like something deep in your soul, you know? So when we got to writing this record, we were like, why don't we just have fun with some of these, you know, and explore that side of emotion also. Cause I feel like there's a space for people who love pop music and country and things like that on this record, because some of it is really fun. And as I was exploring that, I said, I want to be authentic with it about what it's written about and how it's focused. So I started to think about what kind of fun things have I gone through or I've experienced, you know, by way of friends' stories. Or Unstoppable was my parents' love story, because they were the very traditional 1980s burnouts that would skip school.
Like
and
you, go, Justin.
You know, like my dad.
70s.
My bad. Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, see, so you know what I'm talking about.
I know.
My dad used to steal his sister's red Corvette when she was at work and go pick up my mom for joyrides. So that's where, you know, you get some
very Ferris Bueller.
Yeah. So it was fun. And I was like, that's cool. You know, and I feel like it's fun in a way that is still authentically me, which was important.
You know what? There's nothing wrong with being authentic, even when it's a big song like that. I mean, we always think of pop music as this thing that's like written by three or four people in the studio, and then they hand it to the vocalist and say, hey, sing these words. They have nothing, no meaning. We just need your voice on these because we need to brand it, market it, and package it. But that song, and I think it comes from you guys have played music a long time, and Al can attest to this. I think anyone who's been you could be a kid in the mirror with a tennis racket. If I ever put the band together, I'm going to have that one song. You want the audience participation song. Everyone needs that Radio Gaga in their life, right? Mm-hmm. In order to draw people in. What are we going to close the setup with? When we're a big famous band, what are we closing? What's our big encore? What's our fucking Enter Sandman? It's Unstoppable. Yes. You send the crowd running home going, they're singing the song as they're leaving. They feel they're up. They're, you know, they're fuck yeah, this is great, man. Let's hit the gates and get in our car and drive and turn up that song because we want to relive that moment we just lived live. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think that's another stroke of, even if you didn't mean it to be, it becomes a stroke of brilliance in hindsight, right? So, yeah. But the album, again, is very, very like your career. You guys have kind of done metal. You've done rock. You've done punk. You've thrown out some stuff that's a little bit more like, you know, radio friendly, radio design for the radio stuff. Doesn't make it insincere. Just, hey, this is what I'm feeling on this song.
Yeah. So like the way that everything's marketed these days, it's like a singles format for everything. And, you know, obviously we're releasing an album, but that's why we wanted to kind of like push genre boundaries with like different songs. Mm-hmm. You know, we wanted, when I would listen to records growing up, I would like it when like bands would try stuff, you know, a lot of like their, you know, I guess true home base fans would hate it if a band would deviate, like say Metallica, for example, like when they mm-hmm. deviated in the 90s from their thrash sound. Like, I'm not saying it's better. I don't think it's better at all, but I do appreciate, you know, nobody wants to do the same thing over and over and over again. So for us being in the studio writing together, you know, we're inspired by different things. And what Eva alluded to is we like to have fun. And a lot of music, you know, is kind of like, it's heavy, but it's kind of has like a sad or some sort of weird demeanor to it. We wanted to bring back some of the fun aspect of music.
Oh, you mean rock and roll? You guys want to be a rock and roll band, not a sad bastard band.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, right.
That's why
yeah.
country isn't the new rock, because people still want the big sound, but they want to be uplifted. They want to tailgate to some shit. Yeah. They want to feel good. I'm sorry. Yeah. I love bands that I won't name Stained that that are amazing bands. But I'm like, how much? Yeah. How are you even still alive with all this sad in your life? Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Of course, you turn around now, Aaron Lewis is doing country songs.
Right. one of my favorite bands has always been the Deftones. It fits that mood.
Yeah.
Right. And it doesn't make me sad listening to that music. Like a lot of people who don't understand rock and metal and hard rock or whatever it is, rock, just standard rock and roll, will think they listen to it and they're like, oh, it's so angry or it's so aggressive, or I don't feel angry or aggressive when I listen to that style of music ever. It makes me just as happy as a Hank Williams song would. It just is a different emotion. So that's, you know, that's the interesting part of it. It's like there's, but the Deftones specifically, it's like there's, I'm not going to put that on when I have friends over, right? I'm just not. No, there's a time
and a place. Down.
Yeah, you're cranking up Diver Down, you know.
Deftones fans and Bojangles, you know.
Yeah, and I love the Deftones. I even love like the new stuff where it's kind of like I like everything that they do. I don't consume it like I used to do, like the first probably five records. But mm-hmm. every time I hear something new, I'm like, yeah, I love that. I love Meshuggah. Man. I mean, I love Meshuggah. I love Gojira, but it's like there's. Corey music.
Band members are though you named two of our other band members' favorite bands, mm-hmm. and Meshuggah and Deftones. But
yeah,
go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to add, Alice. Like it can be heavy and can be kind of dark and sinister. But War Pigs is about sending your kids off to war in Vietnam. But you know what? That mm-hmm. oh Lord, yeah, and that riff, you're like dancing my ass off to this.
Yeah,
it's great.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't necessarily have to be lyrical content or anything like that. It's just kind of what does the song make you want to move, you know?
Yeah.
Does it make you want to bounce? Does it, you know? And what I always appreciate about the Deftones is they've influenced so many bands.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And there are, you know, have a unique vibe to them, and you can't mistake them for anybody else, you know?
Yeah, and it doesn't make anybody sad. Their music is it sounds like it would be depressing, but nobody's leaving that show like super sad. You know what I mean? They're all leaving the show like, man, that was great. And they feel uplifted by that music. Music's funny like that, right?
Yep,
like
yep.
A band playing all these minor chords and dark sounds and heavy distorted stuff. And all of a sudden you leave that show and you're like, that made me so happy.
Yeah,
so strange. It's so strange because those sounds just, you wouldn't think would elicit happiness from people, but it sure as hell does.
They are modern day cure. They're the cure for the modern day.
Yes. Metalheads are like the cutest, happiest people outside. And then you get them like either when they're performing on stage or you see them at a concert and you're like, that was intense. And they're like, yeah, no, wasn't it great?
Yeah, there was a singer from Slipknot was on Shiprock. I don't know if you guys noticed that.
Yeah.
But think about that, right? I mean, this guy. What happened?
So I got to meet him. It was fantastic.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
The only on Shiprock. There you go. Yep. But you know, it's like that guy's wears his worn creepy mask for 20 years and like super weird dark shit. And then he comes on Shiprock. He's, you know, cargo shorts and a t-shirt. And like we had Stone Sour on. Well, they were on Shiprock in 18, I think.
2018.
Yeah, and I mean, he was wearing a captain's full ship captain's hat. Like he looked like Captain Steubing from The Love Boat, and he was just like, you know, playing this heavy rock. I mean, Stone Sour not as much, you know, but still kind of can be kind of dark and aggressive. And sure. So yeah, it's just music is that kind of interesting thing. It can completely take you places that may not make sense. You know, where it's like that sounds this way, but it makes me feel another. You know. It's very powerful, clearly.
Well, what was super interesting is watching Corey Taylor sing Wait and Bleed, particularly the screamy parts, without his mask on, because I've never seen that before.
Yeah.
Oh, we basically got to look into what rehearsals would be like in a Slipknot rehearsal room.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Hey, yeah. Al, are we live on Facebook yet?
I'm gonna press some buttons here. It's 7:31.
We don't want them tearing down the cathedral gates. Haven't you started yet?
No, I'm 1 minute behind, and I just got to figure out how to do this. The great thing is, I'll go ahead and edit out this part later if I start to sound like it too much.
I'm just gonna go ahead and then throw in a little commercial.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, guys. Well, thank you for listening to Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast. Not only are we a kick-ass podcast, and we're one of the fastest growing rock and roll and heavy metal podcasts in the world, but we also put on a really kick-ass event called Shiprocked. We just finished up our 12th voyage in 2022 here, and we'll be sailing again in 2023. We just launched all the stuff this week, and we'll be heading out of Port Canaveral, Florida, heading towards the Dominican Republic and the Bahamas. And I think we're going to head down to Grand Turk too. We haven't yet come up with the artist, but you never know who will show up. But expect a really good one. And speaking of really good ones, we've got Eve of Under Fire who are part of our 2022 sailing. So welcome them and welcome everyone from Facebook. Thank you for joining us on this wonderful Wednesday evening. We've got Eva and Rob from Eve Under Fire. You guys are probably very familiar with the band now since they just sailed with us. So say hey, guys.
What's up? How are you?
Hello.
Shiprock.
Guys, if you have questions for either one of them, please throw that in the thread and we'll get to those. But we're going to continue our conversation talking about the new album, Love, Drugs, and Misery. It's coming out in May on Better Noise Recordings. So what were your expectations when you were making this record? Were there any, or did you guys think, hey, we have to evolve, we're going to progress, or we're just going to stay the course and this whatever comes out of us is what's going to be on the new record?
I would have loved to say that we had everything figured out. But that's so wrong.
No, never.
So wrong. So far from the truth. So I can't lie to you, because Shiprockers and rock fans in general, they know when you're not authentic, right? But like we were in this situation where we had new stuff on an EP. And when the label kind of had us come out to meet them, they said, hey, we really like this. We want you to finish it for a full record. And we're like, okay. So we get back in studio and we're like, so now what do we do? and so we really had to kind of dig deep and see what it was that we had not explored yet. Because all of the things that just kind of like authentically became the Anchors album and the War EP and all of the other things that we had released previously, we were like, now we have heavy hitter attention, like what do we do that's different? And that's kind of where we were just kind of talking about, you know, we were very focused on emotional stuff for a very long time, and I think a lot of rockers are, right? They just, one of the things that you were saying was about how like you can leave a really mean sounding or really sad sounding song and like feel better, right? I think that's just catharsis, because rock people have been through some things, you know. But like we wanted to explore how to be fun on this record too, which I think really started to, once we kind of took that track, we noticed it started to open up brand new doors, which was super cool.
I think you guys just kind of went in and said, hey, let's go write a whole album full of anthems. That'd be different.
Yeah.
It's, kind of like the, it's like the Def Leppard hysteria method. Let's just write a whole damn greatest hits
every
record.
Song. Yeah. We're this. Yeah.
So I will say that there was an aspect where we wanted to write songs that were massive. That would translate good live.
Amazing.
You know, songs that are obviously words and thoughts that she came up with, but also something that's catchy enough to where people are going to remember it in a live show and want to sing it back to us. So we tried to, that was a focal point for sure.
Oh, big open riffs are just, they are fodder for arenas.
Oh yes. I love me some riffs.
Yeah.
It was
big fat ones.
Lots of them, right? Yeah. We were writing this as a rap record though, right? So even as we were kind of playing with a lot of these hooks and different things and like building it to be, like you said, just these massive things that could just, you know, hopefully radio take over, right? We also wanted to do like, let's keep it to where our genre truth is though, and have guitar solos and giant riffs and things like that. Like, you don't want to forsake things like that in this genre, you know, it's so important. The guitars are massive on this record. And I think it's supposed to be that way.
You got to have guitar solos, man. Like,
dude, I could hear them underneath. I was like, they're welcome. They were seriously a lot of, they're not playing them. They're just playing the melody notes and that's fine. But at the hear solos, it's intoxicating still.
Yeah. You know, and I love nu metal, but I was really missing that from a lot of those songs, you know, from the early 2000s. But yeah, we draw from our inspirations, and I love how fun like a lot of 80s music is. And you'll hear other songs on the record that there's some inspiration from, like there's even a talk box in one of our songs, you know.
Yeah.
Were you doing Joe Walsh or Peter Frampton or Steve
Perry? Johnny used to work on the dock, man. Union went on strike. He's Donna's love.
Sambora? I forgot about that guy. I tried to push that shit way out of my mind, man.
He said 80s, man. The fun in the 80s. Richie Sambora, come on.
So I will say it's more related to like a kickstart in my heart.
Sorry. Fucking my age.
No way. Okay. So for clarification, it was definitely Richie Sambora and not Peter Frampton. Am I right, Rob? Yeah.
Sorry, man.
Because we're halfway there. Okay.
Yeah.
I see.
This is when you're supposed to finish the lyric, but it's cool.
I'm not.
Thank you, somebody.
Lord Almighty.
See?
You said I should finish it. I wasn't sure how all out you wanted me to.
No, I meant finish the whole song, second verse, the whole thing.
Hey, Al, are we paid up on our ASCAP?
No, we're not.
Oh, damn it, we got nailed.
We're not. So, but it's gonna be fine. I'll write a letter.
Copyright strike.
Yeah.
You sang it out of key. It won't
work. It's true. It was a personal rendition.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. It was non-commercial. Thank you. It was.
If you'd have had me sing it, then you definitely would have been safe.
You should definitely make him, like, you know, because I'm manifesting positive things here. Once we get an invite to come back to Shiprock, then you should make him do it at karaoke.
Okay. We'll just write it into the contract where you're forced to sing "Living on a Prayer" at karaoke.
I
was tempted to do a Bloodhound Gang song just because I'm stupid and know a lot of Bloodhound Gang songs. So
yeah, and that doesn't require a whole lot of singing, right?
Was that the Ballad of Chasey Lane? Hey, did you guys participate in the karaoke? Julian puts on a great
Julian's on here right now. He's the best.
Did you know that Julian and I did an Evanescence song? We did Bring Me to Life.
I think I did. I did know that, actually.
What time of night was that?
Yeah, now you say it.
I don't even know. But
Come on.
Okay, so karaoke. We won a trip to Shiprock, by the way. I don't know if anybody else feels. I felt like we won on Shiprock because we didn't know until 4 days before we left that we were going to even play, right? So it was kind of a wild ride for us. We have no idea what to expect when we show up, but we were like, we're coming. So we show up on the boat. And I thought that karaoke was just like a thing, like one, like a day they have, karaoke at the, you know, whatever. I didn't realize this was nightly and that it was the party. Literally nobody does karaoke like Shabrat. We showed up. There was a massive amount of people doing all kinds of cool, mostly rock music. And then the bands show up and then they hang out and sing other with other bands and other fans and just a massive, awesome riot. So I was like, okay, we're new here. You think if I go up there and I sing some stuff that I could like use it as promo? And he's like, yeah, shameless plug. Go, go, go. And it worked. So thank you all for showing up to karaoke.
Well, you're welcome. And thank you for being a wonderful marketing arm of Ask For Entertainment and Shiprock.
There, absolutely. I was going to say, you know,
this is like a living, breathing commercial.
You mentioned where artists will come up there and sing. I mean, again, another one of those Shiprock experiences, it just kind of happens there. It, very rarely on tour are you going to run into other bands or people and like, hey, let's go down to Mel's and do the karaoke night. That's not happening because you have a 12 o'clock bus call because you got to get to Poughkeepsie the next night.
So having this opportunity
to do that is fantastic.
You don't have anywhere else to go, and everybody's creative people, creative, exciting people that like to show off a little bit, you know. And Julian does a great job. I know I said that already, but just to give Julian his props, he's been with us for a couple, 3 years now, and he's kind of a staple for us now. I'd imagine he'd be with us here moving forward too. So he's a super nice guy too.
Good singer.
Heck of a singer for sure. We need to get him connected with a band to play on Shiprocked. No promises, Julian, but we need to figure that out because that would be a lot of fun too.
Yeah.
And I know our guests would really dig that too.
All right, so let's ask.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. Go. Yeah,
I no, was gonna, no. No, I was just gonna get a Shiprocker. Jennifer wanted to know what was your experience like? It sounds like it was pretty good. And did you have a favorite memory from the week?
That's good. That's a good one. Go ahead.
That's a good one. I think we have separate favorite memories.
So we might have to say
it was amazing. The whole experience was amazing. So we'll start there. What was your favorite moment?
So, man, as we already talked about, like you get a chance to hang out with people you'd never think you would ever get a chance to hang out with. And the fans are so cool. It's such a family environment. And that was like one of the big takeaways as a noob that I had no idea about. You know, I think of cruises, I think of like, not that I would ever think like people ready to rock on a boat or like this, but when I always thought of cruises, I think of like uppity, like higher class, like kind of sticking your nose up kind of thing. And like the whole mood on the boat was just everyone wanting to have a good time and act as a family. And it was just like, that was first amazing. But I would have to say getting a chance to meet some of these guys and we became quick friends with Steel Panther. I got to meet Joey Belladonna and have several conversations with him. I stayed on the same floor as him. We always ran into each other. I'm pretty sure he was sick of me by the end of it, but we got him to come and sing a song with us during our set in the lounge, which was, I mean, this legendary singer of a band that's been around for over 40 years.
Yeah, and
singing with us, like that's insane. I can't even like fathom that when I try to remember it, but that was probably it for me.
He was such a sweetheart too, because I you know, my drunk idiot rhythm guitar player friend was like, oh, there's like, I hear you like Journey covers, we do one too if you want to come up, right? And the lead singer of Steel Panther was standing right there. He was like, dude, cold, man. Super cold. I was like, no, you just ruined everything, Chris, shut up. You're making bad impressions. And then, even despite how terribly this pitch was, right, he was like, well, what time do you guys play? And I was like, oh my god, he's considering this. This might actually happen. So we were talking to him and we were just, you know, we were like, yeah, no pressure whatsoever. He says, I don't want to steal anybody's thunder. And I was like, please, the thunder is yours. Please steal the thunder.
Yeah.
It would be incredible. And sure enough, I mean, he didn't even, you know, there was no rehearsal or like even confirmation that this was even going to happen. We get halfway through the lounge set and he showed up on Rob's side of the stage and he was like,
I saw him side stage. I was like, "Are you this?"
Oh, I guess we're doing this. Yeah.
Guys, because our set, we kind of have like most bands, we just have an order we go in, and I was like, "Whatever's next, cancel it, because we're doing this now."
Before he leaves.
Yeah.
I was like,
but you know, that's another great thing is like we always talk about the fans get these really cool experiences. The artists also get to cut loose a little bit and do this and go, I really want to play with this younger band. This would be kind of cool for me. Yeah. It's like re-energizes me and whatever else. And I always want to do this fucking song, but I can't do it with my regular band because all the lights are adjusted to a certain song and our lasers come out on this song and I can't switch up shit. Yeah. So to have this for them is also, it's a vacation and it's fun. And it's like, who cares how loose or, oh, they missed a note. That's part of the in-joke. That's part of the fun.
I've noticed that there was literally, because all of us on Shipwrecked are like choosing out of a pile of preordained equipment that's not really ours, but they're wonderful for us to use, right? But we don't like know it like we know our stuff. So like everybody had a cord issue or a missed thing or a whatever, and they forgot to switch guitars or something, you know, and it was just nobody cared.
Everybody
let down their hair. It was part of the fun. They make a joke about it and the crowd is just eating it up. You know, one of my favorite moments, that's definitely one of them, because Joey was, again, just such a sweetheart and just this legend basically just crashed our set and joined us on stage.
It's funny you mentioned, like, a lot of the Shiprockers are very handy people. Don't ever be surprised, go, man, I don't have this cord. They pull one out of their back pocket. They just so happens they have one on them.
Yeah.
Walking guitar center, some of them, I swear to God.
They're amazing. They show up ready. Because if they can be a part of the show, the set, the whatever, they want to be.
Yeah.
I didn't know. This is probably one of my favorite moments. I had no idea what this was going to mean to this person. And we had a lengthy conversation about it afterwards, which is so sweet. But we were on the deck set. We opened that day. The ship just so happened to be, because it was on our way back. So the ship was sort of like really rocking that day. And I was having a hard time because of all the salt that's in the air, right? So I was like, I'm going to need water today. And if this is the day I cannot lose my water bottle, it's today. So like, I need to figure this out. And I can't, like, I'm trying to figure out how I can tape it down or like gaff tape it to the thing and not lose my water, right? Well, halfway through the first song, I noticed that this wonderful gentleman is just really, really conveniently standing directly in front of me. And it was probably just like a little bit like,
that'd be Dalton.
Yes, it was Dalton. Hi, Dalton. My water bearer. He was saved my set. And he was like, no, seriously, you made my trip. Like, it was so fun to be part of the show. Like, he felt like he was a tech. You know, because I basically just asked him by handing him my water bottle, will you tech for me? And he was like,
it was just awesome.
Fantastic.
Bring a Shiprocker to work day.
Yeah. So,
the whole thing. So I was so grateful.
So everybody kind of has their road to Shiprocked, right? All the bands who come on for the first time, hell, every time, right? There's some kind of story, whether it's the van or the bus or the flight or the hotel and how we made it there. Your story, I think, is pretty unique. You know, Rob and I got on the phone, I guess it was 4 days before you guys got on the ship. And it was like, you know, for me, it was a crazy time because we had all the cancellations and then all the new bookings. So I was in the middle of it. And, So Rob, I got a little bit of a sense of a little bit of panic probably from your end, like, how the do we pull this off? Right. So tell us about, because it was a hell of a drive. And so tell our Shiprock lovelies out here what it took for you guys to put this together to show up to rock their faces off.
I'll start. This is Michigan. We're from right about here. And we got to Galveston in like 72 hours.
That's backwards. It actually looks like that. Never mind.
Whatever.
72.
You know where I'm talking about. Southeast Michigan. That's a long time.
It's a map, damn it. It's a map.
It shows you how directionally challenged I am, but go ahead.
So for our tours and stuff, I handle like all the tour manager stuff, which is why Tony put you into contact with me, I'm sure. And I'm kind of used, but we've never done this before. When I've advanced stuff before, it's, you know, like months ahead of time, you know? So I didn't know. And we have Ed, our bass player, runs our tracks and things like that. So is our setup going to work? Do we have like a generic setup like that a lot of bands use, or do we have something that's a little more unique that we need? I don't know a lot about it, so I don't sound smart talking about it, but
the stage box has like a million racks with a million buttons and they all do different things. And we were like, we can't bring it. What do we do? But like layman's terms, we were like, we could do without most of the buttons, but like, which ones do we really?
Yeah, we need certain buttons. We right? can't live without.
Certain things need to happen here.
So initially, yeah, I mean, I have no idea. And when you started to talk to me about like what kind of gear that you guys had on tap, I was like, oh, well, that's like good stuff. Yes, okay. Yes. Cause we've played like festivals and stuff near us and they're like, okay, yeah. We have backline for you. It's like a
crate.
Fender Twin Reverb or something. And
it's a crate amp.
Like a four piece drum kit somehow and just make it happen. It's like,
yeah,
it's like
a gorilla.
Well, a you crate got, you got amp.
Crate. I think that's their slogan. By the way, I think that's their slogan.
Folks at Crate, but come on.
I think that's their slogan. Crate amps. I think
that,
yeah.
You can't sing it without the arm motion because then everybody. Yeah. Right. But go ahead.
But so yeah, there was a little bit of worry of like, how can we? And the other thing was like trying to get the COVID stuff squared away last minute. There was no tests anywhere, so we mm-hmm. and we had to like kind of try to facilitate that. So between figuring out the production backline, the stage backline, the COVID stuff, how do we get there? Like flying was out of the question because of us bringing what we were bringing. And the fact that it was last minute, and when you anytime you fly last minute, the prices are ridiculous. So it was cheaper for us to drive there by a lot.
Well, we couldn't risk cancellations either because in the current environment, like we would have missed leaving port. Yeah. You know, yeah. So we're like, there's no way we can miss this. We don't have a lot of wiggle room with this drive.
So I mean, yeah. So I've talked to you quite a few times, and I'm so happy you prefer like actual conversations as opposed to texting. I'm just so used to texting like to other tour managers and stuff because that's what they prefer, or emails because it solves a lot of problems right away. You were great. You got people in contact with me I needed to talk to, and my stress was absolutely gone a couple days before the show.
That's good. Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that's our whole team kind of lives for that, you know, is just making sure everybody's stress-free. And that includes the guests too, like trying to solve problems, trying to anticipate problems. And I'm glad it all worked out. It sounded like you guys, I mean, here's the thing. If something's going to be great, it's going to be really hard.
Sure. Yep.
You know, so there you go. Mm-hmm. There's another example,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you had a great experience because it was a challenge and it was difficult to pull off. And that's part of the reason why it was great. Right. So that's
so awesome. Rewarding, you know, and hats off to you guys, because I'm sure like this is our first experience with Shiprock, but I have seen and heard several wonderful and amazing stories prior to COVID and the Shiprocks that you guys have put on in previous years that we were, you know, didn't come to the table for just yet, but you guys have been doing this, making it a wonderful experience. I'm sure it's been rough at occasions. I'm sure. So hats off to you guys for continuing to do the hard things and making this a wonderful thing.
That's the ask for team. I just kind of someone I watched a little bit on the periphery, and it was like, even me, I'm just like, man, this feels like nuts and throat time. This whole last week, it was just like a race against time. Like, oh dear God.
Yeah.
So yeah,
it was one of the hardest ones we had to pull off. But I think, you know, again, going back to it, it's like, it was so hard. It was great because it was so hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? So the two rolled together.
So just reading like all the posts on the Shiprock forum page, everyone was so happy that it happened, that they went. And I can't believe how many posts about people just loving every second of it. And it just like reinforces the fact that you guys have something real special going on here and all the ads for entertainment. And we would love to be a part of it any chance we ever got.
That's awesome. Well,
yeah.
Well, and I think, yeah, I mean, I think it goes to the community too. And a lot of them are watching now. It's like,
yeah,
the group that we had on really, really wanted to be there. And it showed. And like, man, it was just, you know, every year it feels like, maybe not every year, but we feel like it's like, man, we did a good job. You don't pat yourself on the back too much, but you're like, you know, you're proud of what you do. And this year, especially, I think everybody had a great time. And I think, again, because it was so hard to do for everybody. I mean, everybody had to test. Everybody had to travel. Everybody had to be careful. They all were in it. Well, as Lizzie Hale said from the deck stage, she said, we're all in this ship together, you know. So, you know, that's real. So I think what you all will discover is you're going to take this positive momentum, I hope, from Shiprocked. And you're going to discover the real music fans in the United States of America and abroad, because these people, you guys came on board and totally kicked ass. And there was a great vibe about the band and great, great feedback from everybody. Well, you're going to discover these people are going to show up everywhere now. And they're going to come looking for you, and they're going to have the Shiprock flags, and they're going to want you to sign the Shiprock this. And I mean, they're going to be with you as long as you will be making music and making music a career for yourself. You will have this community of people with you on your, not on your back. They will have your back always. They will always be there for you. So
they are the epitome of brand loyal.
Yeah. So you came and did your thing to the best of your abilities and showed them the love and put on a great show for them. They felt it. And it's just, it's like, you are now officially with the power vested in me, the director of operations for Ask For Entertainment. I now pronounce you artist and fan.
Oh, amen.
Wow. This
amen.
Has been.
I'm so scared to commit. No,
good night. Honorary ceremony.
See you later.
It was so great. It was so, because I'm so glad that you bring this up, because one of the fans, when we were chilling on the third deck, when all of it, you know, we were slinging t-shirts and making sure we could meet everybody and just say how appreciative we were, right? And somebody told me about this. They were like, yeah, you know, now at your live performances, you're going to have to shout out the Shiprock crowd. I was like, what do you mean? Like when we're on tour, like after Shiprock? She was like, oh yeah, this is like a thing. people from Shiprock go to other shows and link up with people from Shiprock, and they form like a Shiprock tribe wherever you are. I'm like, yeah. You do what? With how many? Oh my goodness. Yeah. It's like, yeah. So you just shout this out from the stage and they'll come like take pictures and stuff. Yeah. So this was the first experience where I was like, this is, when you, and I've told several people this, but I have to reiterate, when you're on tour and you're, especially as a band that's just starting, you know, you hope to leave there, whatever venue you're at, with maybe a handful, three people, four people that are very dedicated fans that want all your stuff and want to come meet you and want to come, you know, take photos, and they'll be there whenever you perform. That's wonderful in and of itself. But what you folks have done, you have put me on a ship full of them. And they will, like you said, that's just, that is why it's not just unique for fans, but unique for bands to be in an environment like that where people are so supportive in such a massive way. So it was so much fun. We definitely brought our A game. I mean, we got it together in 72 hours, put our game face on, but y'all seem to like it. So well, it was great.
You know what else was we sell these ridiculous pajamas called onesies, and so many people from the on Shiprock like wanted to become a part of it and wear these things, including Satchel of Steel Panther. We could not believe playing our deck stage show that he was in our pajamas. And just like surrounded by fans that were also in our pajamas. Like, these people are
a weird world, man.
People are amazing. And I can't believe they're buying it, but it's awesome that they're buying it.
Because they love it. This is a party. People, I mean, this is why you have theme nights and different other things. People really love fun here.
Yeah.
So when they see that you have branded pajamas, they want to come to, I guess we have to have like a Shiprock PJ party now whenever we play.
Yeah. Well, and your music's fun. And your music's fun too, right? We've been over that. So and those things just are all synergistic, right? You play fun music.
I think we do that. And we get a pillow sponsor and we just have one big ass pillow fight on the next stage while you guys are playing Unstoppable. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
When.
Yes. And you know what? The pillow. Here's the marketing angle for the pillow. The pillow would be fire retardant.
Yes. That's right.
So
right.
That it's not on fire.
All right.
Even under fire retardant. There we go.
That's a second mic drop, but I didn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, not even worthy of a mic drop.
So, hey, we have another question for you guys. All right. It's going to answer from each of you. This is from Karen, who wants to know, you're on death row. What's your final meal?
Oh wow! Mm. Okay.
Chicken.
Chicken. What is chicken?
Stir fry or chicken fajitas? And it was at war in my brain for like 3 seconds, and I was like, "No fajitas. It's got to be fajitas." So
I think we can definitely ask if that's your final answer.
Stink up the entire room while you. Okay. Oh, gotcha.
Chicken fajitas.
Way to be selfish. Way to be selfish. Chicken stir fry.
Yeah. Last meal.
The last meal. Y'all are going to pay for that.
Listen, this tells you all about what this lovely lady is made of, everybody. Her last meal is chicken fajita. I mean,
yeah. Extra sour
salt,
cream.
Salt of the earth. I mean, there you go.
For chicken fajita.
Rob, how about you?
Yeah, I'm such a sweet tooth fanatic. So it'd have to be like a giant Oreo cheesecake with just way more Oreos than they ever put in those damn things because they never.
Now you're just gonna have a bellyache.
Well, I'm gonna want my last meal. So what do I care? You know.
What if it goes haywire though, and it goes, oh, it short circuited. No double jeopardy. You have to live with a bellyache now. You're fucked.
Yeah.
Well, maybe he just like sugar overdoses and it's done before. It's
okay. So yeah, if you were to die from overeating a specific food. Okay, that was a dark turn. It took a dark turn.
Sorry.
Where does the viewing audience go to order the disco onesies?
Ooh, evaunderfire.com. We have a merch store. So
are the onesies available presently?
Yeah.
Are they
available in 3 or 4, maybe 5X? Asking for a friend.
We do have them in those sizes. Okay. Yes.
Does it have the union suit backdrop where I don't have to take them off if I have to?
Oh,
so
we're working on it.
We're working on upgraded onesie.
Trap door. Okay, very good.
An upgraded onesie.
You charge a premium price for them, by the way.
Yeah, we'll come out with the onesie 2000 pretty soon here.
So. The 1.5Z.
Yeah, there you go.
Hey folks, they're all over the onesie now. Like, hey guys, go to the website. We're not going to just go to the website, and you can find other things there.
What were you gonna say?
You can pre-order the album. You can get a onesie. You can. One of our bandmates gained a little bit of weight because they like the sugary stuff, and so we told them that.
Talking about me? I'm
talking about the other one that cannot be named.
The other So yes, she was talking about you, actually.
Yeah, we told Chris if he kept eating all the free ice cream on the ship that he was going to need a twosie. Yeah.
But God, the soft serve. It's hard. Soft serve.
Hey, did you sign an ice cream cone?
I did.
Okay.
Yes.
There you go.
That was probably the most
stardom right there.
For the unique, most unique item I've ever signed.
It's like signing a ninja sword.
Yeah. I mean, when you've signed boobs all the time and you just get offered an ice cream cone, you're
that happens. That happens the first thing all the time.
Missy says there's no onesies currently on your site. Missy is pissed. She is pissed.
Man, okay, I will figure this out. I will post it in the Shiprock forum as soon as I figure it out. I will figure it out within the next 24 hours, I promise you. And I will come up with some other kind of link because I have to ask Kristen. It has them all.
Yeah, so, our merch store.
I know where they are. Yeah. I will make them available.
Yeah, are there any presently like in the dresser drawers behind you where you could just pull one out just right now?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, we're going to need to do that.
Well, are you going to pull one of the black ones out? Because that's what everyone likes.
She's gonna get whatever she gets.
What other colors do you have?
We don't need to be picky.
We sell white ones, but the white ones aren't very good because people, they get dirty real easily.
That's a white one.
Behind it, though.
There you go.
Wow, look at that.
Yeah.
Fancy.
There you go.
Yeah, that's a good. So, what's the material on that? Is that cotton poly? What is that?
It's a lot.
Oh, it's soft.
These are very.
It's Egyptian point. 0.11.
Yeah.
4,000 counts.
Chamomile skin.
All the way to
Malaysia. Is it leek aloe?
That cotton. It's a poly blend. So
extra points if young Robert Lieberg goes ahead and puts that on right now on camera.
Yeah.
No.
I can't think of a better send off.
Don't dare us.
What size is it?
We take Derek very seriously.
Hopefully it's a small, Rob.
Yeah, we want to really fit tight.
For all of us. For all of us.
Yeah.
So
you don't have to.
The story behind there was a moment where we were all making fun of Chris because he was wearing the pajamas. And we were like, oh, that's not very rock star. And our producer said, oh, that's not very rock star. And then it caught on. But of course, when he was saying, oh, it's not very rock star, when we came out with the EP, we all teased him a little bit about his onesie and he cried and he walked off stage and then all of us
tight.
And then we all walked on stage with our onesies and we played Until Forever in our onesies and we all had a onesie party. So it was a very fun thing. And we
are going to really be outlining your,
Yes, this is going to be amazing. Thank God it's a small.
You know, you can wear the onesie because what did Heidi came out dressed like a unicorn for Butcher Baby? So, yeah.
And not for nothing, but if I remember, Rob, you stand probably what, 6'3"?
6'6".
Right, afro, that's what I said. 6'6" with the afro. So this is going to be, this could end tragically. But we're going to see what these things are made of, literally. We're going to see the high quality craftsmanship of the Eva Under Fire disco onesie.
Okay, here.
This is going to be just devastating. Is he covering up his schnoz?
He's covering up his satchel.
Yeah, there you
go. At least satchels fit him better than yours.
Yeah, everything fits satchel properly because he's in shape. So no offense, Rob.
That looks good. That looks good.
Yeah, look at the guns. Yeah, yeah, well done. Yeah, look at guns. It's the side hip area that I really think is accentuated on you right now. Yes, the side hip, bottom.
Yeah, all the curvature.
Like top leg. Yes.
Yeah.
Take it off. If I sit down, I'm going to split the ass.
I know. So,
ladies and gentlemen, a round of applause for our model.
Max effort, much appreciated. Yeah. Thank you.
Anyway, well, listen, we've had you guys a full hour and we can't thank you enough. And Rob's Handsome Boy Modeling School, we thank them as well.
Wonderful. Eva, ladies and gentlemen,
And then you guys have set a precedent that every artist we have on now, they have to try on something from their merch store for our amusement.
Yeah.
You know, I'm actually sweating from that.
Right.
I got to go to the gym or something, man.
So, anyway, guys, listen, Love, Drugs, and Misery, the new album coming out here in May. What are you guys doing as far as road work? What can we expect? Where can folks see you guys?
Trust and believe, within the next several weeks, you'll be getting many, many announcements.
We can't announce it yet, unfortunately, but pretty soon we will.
Is it a big surprise?
In May, it is a big surprise. Because what's happening in May and what's happening after May, it's all going to come like in the next couple of weeks. We're going to announce everything. You guys are going to be super.
Right. Well, we'll obviously be on top of things, what you guys are doing. And when you post it, we will post it for you as well because we want to get people out there supporting y'all.
Yeah, no doubt.
Eva, Rob, thanks guys. We really appreciate this. This is a lot of fun.
Much love. See you guys soon.
Hi, this is Chad Nicefield.
And this is Justin Press.
We're the host of Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast, a part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. We're inviting you to sail away with us on an epic journey in musical enlightenment. Every week, we bring you only the best artists in rock music and discuss everything from the cruise to the stage to the saga of being a professional recording artist. We'll have lots of special guests along the way, so tune in every week.
Your stateroom is available every Monday morning, so welcome aboard.